Good morning. You all don't look quite as strange as you did yesterday. I got to visit with a few of you and see all day, and that was a blessing to get to start getting to know some of you more personally. Well, this morning we're going to talk about the power of peer pressure, both positive and negative. And I feel a little bit inadequate to talk about this, but we're going to try to do that. So what does peer mean? I looked at peer and it simply means one who is equal to another. So if you are a peer to him, then you are equal to him. And that can mean in rank or merit or quality. So someone who is equal in rank or merit or quality. And then, so I looked up equal. So I don't think that peer is a biblical term that I'm aware of. And so I looked up equal because peer kind of means equal, and that is a biblical term. Would be number 2470, and that just simply means similar in amount or kind, agree as much, it's as much, it's equal or it's like. And I'm going to show you on the board here a little bit, if I can. So when we think of equal, we know that 2 plus 2 equal 4. This is the same amount here as we have here, right? So with that concept, we could also, we can take any numbers, but we can go also 4 is what? Are you familiar with that sign? Are you all familiar with that sign? What does this mean? Anyone? Greater than. 4 is greater than 3. Or we could say 5 is less than 6. So these are not equal, okay? These are not equal. One is greater than, one is less than. And that's the problem that we have in everyday life. Before we know it, soon I am less than you are, or you are more than I am. And so we try to get that equaled out. We try to balance it out, and we do whatever we need to do. If you have a hat on, I need to get a hat on too so I'm equal with you so you're not greater than me. Or whatever we're trying to balance out there, it's a mathematical equation is really what it is, peer pressure. The pressure is on this one until it's equal with this. Or the pressure is on this one until it's equal with that. Over here, there's no pressure. No pressure at all. It's equal. It's equality. Peer pressure can mean equality. So there's a lot of negative peer pressure. Like, you all face negative peer pressure, and that is not good. You also face positive peer pressure, and that is good. And so in my teen years, I faced negative peer pressure, and I can't remember a lot of those things as well as I wish I could. My life has, I'm not sure why, but a lot of the bad things in my life, I don't really remember too much about them. But I do remember when I joined the youth group, I was Amish. And I was really shy. And that's, everybody I say that to, they find that hard to believe. Because I remember being so shy, I was afraid that someone would see that I'm actually there. I didn't want anyone to know I was there. I stood in the corner, and I spent a lot of my time out in the barn that first night I went to the youth gathering. And when I did go in the house, I stood in the corner where the lighting was dim, hoping no one would see me, and sure enough, one of my schoolmates saw me and said, "Danny," you know, and I just like almost melted. But I found out several weeks into that when I started drinking, I wasn't as shy anymore. It helped my shyness. And that took me down a wrong path. But everybody else was drinking, and so I drank too. There was peer pressure. Peer pressure, I wanted to be equal with my other peers. And soon, I not only wanted to be equal, I wanted to be greater than my peers. There was even more pressure. I also started listening to music. That I hadn't done that before, but then every chance I got, I started listening to country music. I thought that was the greatest thing since strawberry ice cream or whatever. It was just, I loved country music. And then I went on to love bluegrass music. And that does things to your life that is not good. I didn't realize it, but I was going down a wrong road. And I also loved singing. And I have a brother just a year and a few months younger than I am. And one time we were at a gathering, and there wasn't a lot of youth there, but there was a few youth there, probably 30 or 40. And we were just singing through a song book. It wasn't a hymn book, it was just songs in it. And it had a lot of had a lot of spiritual songs in it, had a lot of country songs in it. It was called the Swartz Songbook. It had just come out very recently in our community. And we were just going through and singing songs, and all at once we came to a song, and me and my brother just took off singing, just like, we just figured it's a song that everyone knows, and no one else joined in, and we stopped after the first line. Why aren't you helping? And they said they never heard of it. Well, we heard our uncle sing it. When we were growing up, our uncles who lived in Seymour, Missouri, would sing that song. And it was called, In Childhood, I Heard of a Heaven. I wondered if it could be real. And so they said, well, sing it. And so me and my brother sang the song. And they didn't know that we could sing together. We didn't really either. We sang at home. So we started singing together, me and my brother. And that took me down another wrong road of wanting to show off my voice. And I loved singing. I absolutely loved singing. And then I also started, everybody else, not everybody, but most of the people smoked, so I started smoking, and I didn't care for it. And I just did it on a Sunday evening when we were with the other youth. I didn't smoke otherwise during that time. But there's just pressure to fit in, pressure to do what everybody else was doing, and it wasn't good things. But there was also some positive peer pressure came into my life. I grew up in an alcoholic home where my dad was an alcoholic, and he was a very good dad. He told us children a lot of Bible stories, and I still remember some of those stories better from what he told me than what I've read them since. The story of Joseph in the Bible, the story of Abraham, the story of Jesus, and he was a very good storyteller. He would tell us those stories, and he planted good morals in us. But he also drank, and sometimes when he drank, he got very angry and angry at circumstances and angry at mom, and cuss words would fly, and we just hated the way things happened. And sometimes when things got desperate, we'd run over to our Amish neighbor, and we'd say, Mervin, can you come help? Dad is really mad. And Mervin would come over, and he was just a young deacon in our church, and as soon as Mervin would come over, my dad would settle down and nothing was wrong, you know. And so, but we went through a lot of anxieties and things like that. I hated what alcohol was. And yet, when I was with my peers, I would drink too. But when I was 18, my dad stopped drinking. There was a lot of things that we went through in our family. And finally, the whole family left and left me and my sister that's older than I at home to take care of the chores, and mom and all the little children left. And dad came to the end of himself, and he cried out for help. And we tried many things before this, but he quit drinking when I was 18, and he was 42 years old. There was a lot of people had been involved in his life before this, and with no success. But when he came to the end of himself, he quit drinking. And he never drank the rest of his life. He lived to be 73 and he never drank. But as time went on, I was going down the same path and I became a weekend drunk. And my dad would tell me, Danny, don't take that first drink. Don't take the first drink. And well, you know, I can handle it, but I couldn't. And finally I started realizing I couldn't. So my dad was putting on the pressure. Don't do it, you know. And then the part that I want to come to is I had a real good friend that we were chum buddies, but he was a really bad, when he got to drinking, he did really crazy stuff. I never did, I just became whatever. Anyhow, but he did crazy stuff and he got angry with his sisters and stuff. But he was my real good friend otherwise. And on a New Year's Eve, he made a bet with another young man to not drink for a year. And, you know, the first one, if someone would break the bet, then they'd have to give the other one this amount of money or something. Well, he kept that, and so did the other one, and it changed him. He became such a good friend of mine. His name was Sammy JJ. And him and I were just the best of buddies, but I was drinking, he wasn't. But I could handle it, I thought, he couldn't. And this went on for about 10 months, 11 months, and finally I was so sick and tired of what it did to me on the weekends that I thought if he can quit, I can quit. And I wouldn't have never had the nerve to be around my friends if he wouldn't, he kind of paved the way. He was someone I looked up to because he never, all the others were drinking, he wouldn't drink, he stayed sober. He's nice, jovial, and clean. And I just loved the way he was, and I looked up to him. I wanted to be like that too. And so that gave me the courage to quit drinking. I was 20 years old when I quit drinking. November the 25th of 1985, I quit drinking. And it changed a lot of things in my life. But the sad part was he had made a bet for a year, and that bet came up on January the 1st. And I had just quit drinking like a month. But by that time, it was about 6 weeks, and by that time I was really liking to be sober, to not be under the influence. And then he quit, he started drinking again, and he was worse than ever before. And he went down that path for, I think, 15 years until he finally quit drinking. They had to get help for him and everything. And he never got married. He's still not married today. And that's not necessarily why, but it took him down a wrong path, that drinking did. But that was really, that put a lot of pressure on me. The pressure was on when he started drinking again. But because I also had pressure from my dad and how different our family was now for the last 2 years that equaled it out, see? I was pressured from him to start again, pressure from my dad to not. It was good pressure. And so we all have different stories like that. That's just a story from my youth. We have a lot of Bible examples. So when we think of David as a young boy, what do we think of David being as a young boy? Anyone know? What was David as a young boy? Anyone know? Huh? How's that? Someone over here said something.
Shepherd.
Yes, he was a shepherd boy. The Bible tells us quite a bit about David. We might look at, if you want to turn to 1 Samuel, we might read a few things there. 1 Samuel chapter 16. David was a shepherd boy. He was, see, this, we have influence going on up here. This greater influence is more than this influence over here, right? And that's the way it is in our life. There's always influence. When we think of pressure, it's also called influence. And, I'm in the wrong place here. 1 Samuel 16, verse 11, says, here's Samuel wanting to anoint a king. And Jesse's sons are all coming by. And then Samuel said unto Jesse, Are these here all thy children? And he said, there remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he keepeth the sheep. And Samuel said unto Jesse, send and fetch him, for we will not sit down till he come hither. So Samuel's four oldest, or Jesse's four oldest boys were there, and one passed by, and the other, these were all big men. But the youngest was keeping, tending the sheep. We see that here. And then in chapter 17, if we go to chapter 17, verse 20 is when David was sent to go see how it goes with his brothers who were fighting, who were in the army fighting the Philistines. Verse 20 says, and David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper, and took and went as Jesse had commanded him, and he came to the trench as the host was going forth to fight and shouted for the battle. But all I want to bring out of that is Jesse was keeping the sheep, but he got up early that morning and found someone else to keep the sheep while he was gone. And so he was influenced by his life of tending the sheep. You think that molded something into his young heart, into his life? Anyone, you think that had any influence on him? I think it did. I think when he was out there by himself, just him and the sheep and other wild animals, we read where a bear and a lion came and took away a sheep and he killed them both. And it doesn't give us much detail, but it sounds like by hand he killed both the lion and the bear. But it was God fighting. He knew God was doing it. He's just doing his job of keeping the sheep. He was influenced by God. David, as a young man, was influenced by God. And that's what I'd like for you all to get in your hearts is do we want to be equal with our peers? There's that tendency there, but always be influenced by what God would have you to do. And remember, choices create consequences. We want to respond with, we want to have a response, not a reaction. We heard a lot about these different things yesterday. But another thing I want to bring out about David here, chapter 17, verse 26. Let's just read that verse. And it says, and David spake to the men that stood by him. We all know the story of David and Goliath, right? And this is just the prelude to David and Goliath. David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? I mean, the others were there, and they were looking at this big giant up on the hill and thinking, whew, I mean, how can we go up against someone like that? But David didn't look at that. What he looked at is that man was defying the armies of the living God. No one dared do that. Was he jealous? I think he was very jealous for God. He wasn't jealous that someone else would be a greater man than he was. He didn't care about any of that. What he cared for was someone was making himself bigger than God. And he said, no way, no one does that. Let's read another verse. Verse 36. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing that he has defied the armies of the living God. How dare someone do that? He was very jealous for God. And then if we read from 43 through 47, let's read that. And the Philistine said unto David, am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. Now this giant is not having a little lad like David. I don't know if he was 16 or what, but he wasn't going to have anyone like that. That was coming against him. 45. Then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand. And I will smite thee and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. If we can remember that for the rest of our lives, I've been in many different spiritual battles, and too many times I've made them my own. And they're not mine. The battle is the Lord's. All we need to do is be on his side and do what he would have us to do. Okay, we're not going to look more at David, but that was a positive. David was influenced by God. He had there was all this pressure here for him to, if we would read all of that, his brothers said, "Who do you think you are? You should be at home and keeping the sheep, and here you are trying to fight, and you're not even part of the army," you know? They were disdaining him. There was a lot of pressure there. David did not buckle under that because he was being influenced by someone else, and it was God. Okay, another one that we can look at is Daniel. Daniel, we'll just read a few verses in the book of Daniel. He was captured by Nebuchadnezzar's army and taken to Babylon. He was not in his own town, and he was supposed to eat only the king's food. And it says in verse 5, says, "And the king," I'm reading in Daniel chapter 1, verse 5, "And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king." And verse 8, "But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself." Now we can read the rest of the story, and I'm sure you all have already. But Daniel purposed he was not going to be to buckle under this peer pressure of eating that meat. There's another positive influence that we read about in the Bible. We could, So was there pressure there for Daniel? Was there any pressure there? What do y'all think? There was a lot of pressure there. I don't think any of us have ever been under pressure like he was. And he did not give in to that pressure. It was nothing equal. It was pressure. And he did not buckle. And God saw him through that. Just eating this vegetables, you could say, he was more rosy-cheeked and stronger than the others were, who were on the king's meat. Okay, another one that we can look at is in Numbers chapter 13 and 14. I'm probably not going to turn there. We'll just go over that a little bit because of time. I tend to get a little long-winded. But Numbers 13 and 14, we read about the 12 spies where they were sent out to look over the land of Israel and see what all was there. And so they went, and it gives the name of all 12. And they went and they spied out the land for 40 days, and they came back. And they brought back a report, and they also brought back some grapes. There's a verse that says it was the time of the first ripe grapes when they went to spy out the land. And they brought back a bunch of the first ripe grapes, and according to the way it says, those were grapes like we've never seen before. I mean, it took two men to carry that bunch on a stick, kind of. And they also brought back some pomegranates. So they brought back, the land is good. It's everything that we thought it might be. But can we take it in? No. There's 10 of these men that said the whole land is full of giants. That wasn't true. There were giants in the land. There were walled cities in the land. And they said, we can't do it. And there was a lot of pressure there that they were putting on the people. And it says all the people despaired and they cried. And, oh, no, why did you bring us out of Egypt only to face this? Now we won't even. And it made all the people's hearts, and I don't know how you say it in English. It made them opvandish. How do you say it in English? It made their hearts I don't remember how you say it in English. I've always read it in German before. But it turned their hearts away from God, and it was, there was just a lot of pressure there. But there was two men that said, don't do that. Joshua and Caleb said, if God is with us, we can take it in. But you know the story. For 40 years, because of this pressure from these 10 men that swayed all the hearts of the people, because of that, they had to walk around the wilderness for 40 years and getting nowhere, until all the men that were 20 and over, that when they came out of Egypt, they all died there in the wilderness. A lot of negative pressure. And there's just a lot of that in all of our lives. There's another one very interesting in Galatians, in the Bible here, that we read about. In Galatians chapter 2, I'm going to read you the verses from 11 to 14. You can turn there if you want. And here's Paul talking about, him having the revelation from Jesus himself. It's not like he was able to talk with the other apostles, but he had all this revelation from Jesus himself. And he's giving the story here. Verse 11. But when Peter was come to Antioch, I withstood him to the face, because he was to be blamed. But before that certain came from James. So when they came from James, what does that mean? These were men. James was the apostle and bishop at the church at Jerusalem. Okay, he was the leader there at the church at Jerusalem. And when some came from that church, when some came from James, he did eat with the Gentiles. But when they were come, okay, for before that certain came, Peter sat down and he ate with the Gentiles, because he knew that the gospel had went out to the Gentiles. But when certain came from the church there at Jerusalem, from James, says, I'll just start reading verse 12. For before that certain came from James, he did eat with the Gentiles. But when they were come, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing them which were of the circumcision. And the other Jews disassembled likewise with him, insomuch that Barnabas also was carried away with their dissimulation. But when I saw that they walked not uprightly according to the truth of the gospel, I said unto Peter before them all, if thou, being a Jew, livest after the manner of the Gentiles, and not as do the Jews, why compellest thou the Gentiles to live as the Jews? And he goes on there. But Peter, when he was just with the Gentiles, he would sit down and eat with them. But when the Jews came, he just kind of went over here with the other Jews, and he didn't mingle with the Gentiles. And he even got Barnabas, who was a very upright man, he even got him to kind of side with them. And Paul withstood him to the face. The pressure was on when these men came from Jerusalem. The pressure was on. Am I going to yet live the gospel like Jesus showed me that happening there with Cornelius, you know, when these things came down from heaven, and Peter was well aware that now the gospel has went to the Gentiles, and the Gentiles are called into the church just like the Jews. They're all one. Peter knew this, but yet, because of the pressure, he withdrew himself, and Paul withstood him and put him right. And so that's easy for us to do. We talked yesterday. Is it easy to not be ashamed to talk about Christ, especially when our peers aren't doing it? Are we still going to not be ashamed? I want to encourage you, every time we do, it's a battle, just like Goliath, just like David and Goliath, it's a battle that we have won when we're not ashamed of Christ. Don't buckle under that pressure. Even older people can be swayed by peer pressure. It's not just you all. I am swayed by peer pressure. Adam and Eve were swayed by peer pressure. The serpent came to Eve and said, has God said you can't eat of all these things? And you know the story. Eve broke off. And then it says that she gave to Adam, who was with her, and he did eat. So it wasn't like Adam was out behind the barn doing the chores or something, then she brought the apple over there or the fruit over there to him, whatever fruit it was. And then, oh, okay, sure, I'm hungry, and he didn't realize what it was. I think, according to the scripture, that Adam was right there with her when Eve did this. So the scriptures tells us in 1 Timothy 2:4, 2:14, here's a scripture that is kind of eye-opening. It says, and Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived was in the transgression. Now, do you all know what that means? I'm not sure if you do, but Adam wasn't deceived. He knew right and wrong. Eve was, the serpent came and deceived Eve. That's what happened. She was deceived. She buckled under the pressure and she was deceived. Sometimes it doesn't take much. But Adam wasn't deceived. He knew he shouldn't be eating. So why did he eat? Why did he eat from that fruit? We don't know. We weren't there. But from everything that we can tell, it was probably, here, I taste it, and it's actually good. And there's nothing happened even when I tasted it. I haven't died yet. And what is a man's, you don't know these things, but I'm just saying older people buckle under peer pressure. When we're married, us men have a desire to please our wives. We want to please them. And sometimes we'll do things that we shouldn't do because we want to please them. And I think Adam wanted to please Eve, and so he also ate of that fruit. He buckled under pressure. Another one is in Matthew chapter 20. We read of another account. I might just read that one, Matthew chapter 20. I'm going to read from 1 to 16. And just listen to this account, Matthew 20, 1 to 16. Jesus is talking here, and he says, for the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is a householder, which went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And he said unto them, go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right I will give you. And they went their way. Now notice, in verse 2, here he is having a conversation with these who are standing idle, and he says, would you agree to work for me for a day? And a day back then was 12 hours. Most of our days when we labor now is 8 hours. There are still some that do 12. But it was 12 hours. Would you agree to work for a penny a day? For a penny for the next 12 hours. And back then, evidently, a penny was like, we would look at a $100 bill now or something, maybe. I don't know. But they agreed. But the next group here, in verse 4, he just says, and this was already at the third hour, so the others had already been working for 3 hours. And then he finds this group at the marketplace, and he says, and whatsoever is right, I will give you. He just said, I will give you whatsoever is right. They didn't agree on a price. He just went to work. And again he went, verse 5, out about the sixth and the ninth hour and did likewise. Again, 3 hours later, and he found some more, and he just said, whatever is right, I will give you. Verse 6, and about the 11th hour he went out and found others standing idle and saith unto them, why stand ye here all the day idle? They say unto him, because no man has hired us. He saith unto them, go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, that shall ye receive. So when even was come, the Lord of the vineyard saith unto his steward, call the laborers, and give them their hire, beginning from the last unto the first. And when they came that were hired about the 11th hour, they received every man a penny. But when the first came, they supposed that they should have received more, and they likewise received every man a penny. He treated them all equal. Did he? Did he treat them equal? He did, and yet he didn't. Some worked for 1 hour and got a penny. Others worked for 12 hours and got a penny. But when the first came, they supposed, okay, I had read that. Verse 11. And when they had received it, they murmured against the goodman of the house, saying, these last have wrought but 1 hour, and thou hast made them equal unto us, which have borne the burden and heat of the day. But he answered one of them and said, friend, I do thee no wrong. Didst thou not agree with me for a penny? Take that thine is, and go thy way. I will give unto this last even as unto thee. Is it not lawful for me to do what I will with mine own? Is thine eye evil because I am good? So the last shall be first and the first last, for many be called, but few chosen. And so this is just another, you know, there was a lot of pressure there for them to get, for the ones that were hired first. We want more than a penny. That's not right, just giving us a penny. We labored all the day long. We had the heat of the day on us. Others just labored an hour. But he said, you agreed to this penny. And many times we think that we should have something more from our parents or something more from whoever we're working for. We're not satisfied. And, you know, this is just a side note, but when the soldiers came to John the Baptist and said, so what shall we do? You know, and he said, do no man harm and be satisfied with your wages. Just be satisfied. Don't always be wanting more. Don't have, you know, these things can come into play in our lives without us even knowing. There's another one, and I'm not sure how much time I want to spend with this one, but this is just, this came to me the other week as I was meditating on sharing here. I don't know what y'all think about pressure from riches, but the Bible talks about the deceitfulness of riches, and it also talks about the deceitfulness of sin, and it talks about being deceived. Where do I have that? So I won't spend much time, but in Mark 4, I might read that. In Mark 4, this is where the sower went out to sow. And in verse 18 and 19, Jesus is talking here, and he's saying, and these are they which are sown among thorns, such as hear the word, and the cares of this world, and the deceitfulness of riches, and the lusts of other things entering in, choke the word, and it becometh unfruitful. Now, what has that got to do with peer pressure? I think it has a lot, because as young people, we start getting into the realm of money. And I think that's the downfall of our people, is having money available to them. I don't think that's good. And I'm not your dad or mom, so I'm not trying to find fault, but I just from my own family, and just from my experience, when someone has money available, then soon it starts meaning something to them. It starts becoming somewhat of a god in their life. And riches, and it doesn't need to be just money, it can be things, possessions, but it's deceitful. Riches are very deceitful, but it puts the pressure on to buy something with it, buy something nicer, buy something bigger, something more, something else. There's pressure there, there's peer pressure to keep up with you know, to make so we're equal to our other brothers and our other sisters. We want to be equal. And the pressure is on, and it's very deceitful. In Hebrews 3:13, it says, to exhort one another daily, while it is yet called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. That's something else that puts pressure on our lives, is when there's any sin in our lives, any kind of sin, there's pressure there. Try to hide it. And it's deceitful. And especially when there's others that are doing the same thing. So those are just kind of side notes there about the deceitfulness of riches, the deceitfulness of sin. Let's be careful with those two things. Okay. One of the things that I think, especially, I've never been a girl. We've had a lot of girls in our home, so I know a little bit about girls, but I'm not real sure what all makes them tick. But I kind of know what makes a boy tick, because I've been a boy and I've been around boys. And one of the things that I think that we struggle with sometimes is a word called emulations. Do you know what the word emulations means? Does anyone in here know what emulations mean? Anyone of you youth? We read that word. Let me read it to you, and maybe you'll, in Galatians 5, it gives us the list of the works of the flesh says are these. They are manifest, which are these. It says adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and such like. Of which I have told you, of which I tell you before, as I have also told you in time past, that they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. So a word like that must be a serious word. It's a dangerous word. And I was very much into emulations for a long period of time when I was y'all's age and even older. There was no one going to outdo me. I always had to be greater than someone else when it came to sports, working. I could put more shingles on than anyone else. That's back when we nailed them by hand. I could not keep up with my older brother. I could not do that. He was faster than I was. But that's, and a little bit of that can be okay, I think, just to, in fun. But emulations, in a favorable sense, and this is just in the Strong's, I didn't look it up in a regular dictionary, and I should have. But it just, in a favorable sense, it means heat, zeal, okay? But in an unfavorable sense, it means jealousy, fervent of mind, indignation, zeal. And I wish I'd have taken time to look up in the dictionary, but I think what it simply means is trying to outdo another. Emulations. I think that is the cause, many times, of pressure, peer pressure. Emulations, trying to outdo someone else. Whether it's in cooking, like I said, I don't really know any much examples from your side, but you just let your mind go over that. But from your side, you know, some of you can run faster than the other maybe, or jump higher, hit the ball further, catch better, and the list goes on. But it's emulations is actually a work of the flesh, and it's very dangerous. So I would encourage you to not let that be a pressure for you. So what I did is I asked the youth from our congregation, quite a few of them, to participate in this. For me, I asked them to write down on a piece of paper some things that they face, some peer pressure that they face, negative, and also peer pressure that they faced that was positive in their life. And I'm going to read you some of these, okay? So the negative ones are, and I'm going to largely just kind of read them as they came in to me. A negative one was cutting friendships. It says, popular for the not so popular. Those who are not as gifted or unconverted. So there was pressure there to cut friendships because, you know, we like to be around those who aren't quite so popular or gifted, but then there's pressure, and so we kind of stay away from some of those, and we kind of hang out with those who are more popular and more gifted. Have any of you ever noticed any of that type of pressure in your life? That is not good. That is not good pressure. Another one was trying to be someone that you aren't. One of them said, I have pressure to try to be someone that I'm really not. Just always putting on this, you know, kind of like this. You know, I remember, and this always really bugged me, and this is just a side note, but, you know, in my youth, I was probably in my low 20s when the brother just 2 years under me, there was three of us brothers right in a row. I came from a family of 14, by the way. There were six of us brothers and eight sisters. And the brother just under me, or 2 years under me, him and I worked together at the hog farm, the family hog farm. We did that for 19 years that we worked together there. So we knew each other inside and out. But when I was in my low 20s, he was probably 21 or 22, so I must have been 23, 24, in there somewhere. He started dating a girl. And it was, I'd never dated a girl at that point yet. And I wasn't going to be a bachelor. I was trying to get married, but the right one hadn't come along. But anyhow, he started dating a girl, and then he ended up courting her, and they courted her for 5 or 6 years before they finally got married, and they're still happily married today. We love them, Joe and Liz. We love them a lot, but I noticed the time that he was courting all those 5 to 6 years, and even for quite a few years after he was married, whenever, you know, I saw him every day at the hog farm. I knew him inside and out, but whenever he was around his in-laws, any of his brother-in-laws or sister-in-laws, he would walk differently than he would when he had a different walk. He couldn't walk normal. There was this pressure there. He walked different, and it always bugged me. And I, you know, it's one thing that my side, my wife's side of the family that noticed about me is you, what you see is what you get when you, you know, when you see me. I was no different at home as I was when they saw me, whatever. But anyhow, that always kind of, and I've noticed that in other people, that when they're around certain people, they kind of act different. They have their head a little different. They walk a little. That's peer pressure. It's silly. We don't need to buckle under that. We don't need to be even. It's okay if we're less. It's okay if we're just who we are. Everybody loves a person who is genuine. Amen. We love genuine people. So let's be genuine. Let's not buckle under pressure. If you come from a different family, that's great. You come right from the family that God made you be born in. God doesn't make any mistakes. And you are the way that God made you, by the way. That's why you are the way you are. But a lot of times we're different because of pressure. And it doesn't need to be that way. Okay, let's go. Let's read some more. Another one says, trying to fit in and look like those around us. We kind of talked about that. Trying to fit in and look like those around us. And another one said, being too formal instead of your own true self. We just get more of these, don't we? Being too formal just instead of, you know, at home we're our own self, but when we're around certain people, we're just kind of, you know, we put on this different face and the whole bit. Trying to fit in big groups. Have you ever faced any of that pressure? You know, it's okay when you're just in a little group, but when you're at Burn for Bible school maybe where there's, how many youth, 200 youth, then how do you fit in? It's hard, isn't it? But there don't need to be, there shouldn't be any pressure there. Just be your own self. Be who you are, friendly, willing to meet people. Another one was that you will not have a happy, fulfilled life if you never get married. There was pressure there to get married because you won't be happy if you're not. That's real. That's very real. Another one was singing. Pressure there on the singing because, you know, not all of our voices are same. Some of us can't control our voices like others. You know, I ruined a lot of my voice with working in a hog farm for many, many years and smoking at the same time. And it was hard on my health. And I've been sowing counter crops, trying to sow counter crops for quite a few years since then to counter that, and praying and also being extremely thankful to God that I've got the voice that I have. But I know that, and I've determined I will not ever sing again so someone can hear my voice. I've determined that. I've determined to sing only for God. And so I can still sing some, but sometimes my voice just fades out. But there's pressure there, when we're young, because our voices aren't maybe quite like someone else's voice. There's pressure in singing. It don't need to be. Our voice is the way. Now, it's okay to learn how to sing good and right and to sing your parts. That's good. But if your voice is not like someone else's, you don't have this deep voice or you don't have this good, nice tenor voice, that's fine. Sing. Like, the only way I can sing in church is I just sing soprano or whatever it'll lead. I can't follow the bass. My voice should go bass, but I don't know how to do it. And I've tried and tried, but I don't know how. And I think it's, and I'm okay with that because I know that I can still sing a little bit. And it's a crop that I'm harvesting from things that I've sowed for years that weren't good. And it's a daily reminder to me to only sow good things. It's good for me. Another one was wanting new stuff. These are negative peer pressures in our life, wanting new stuff. Have you ever wanted new stuff because someone else got something new? That's very real. Music. Let's kind of end with singing. But music is what we listen to. Want to listen to the same thing as our peers do, don't we? Instead of maybe, and in the positive sense, that is very good. If our peers are listening to good music, and we also, but if we have some friends that are kind of on the borderline, they listen to some of this other stuff that is kind of fleshly, and it gets to our flesh a little bit, that's not good. It's pressure there. And another one was to not be too spiritual. There's pressure right there. Listen to this. Not be too spiritual or holier than thou. Because people see that. You're really spiritual, you know. You're holier than thou. Kind of that thing. And this creates a pressure to be more casual. Just to be casual. That shouldn't be. You should be spiritual. You should be holy. Brother David has been talking to us about that, and he's going to some more. That is our calling. Be ye holy as I am holy. And there should be no pressure to not be holy just because someone else isn't. Another one was trying to style my hair like my friends. Whoa. Y'all have pressure in that way? Trying to style your hair? I think that's very real. I see that a lot in youth. And I'll just share something with you. There was quite a few years ago in our church where we were, I struggled with the amount of young men who started having mops in front here instead of just a normal haircut, just, you know, they had a mop in front. And I struggled with that. I hate that. It's a worldly fashion. And it's creeping into our churches. And I still had my Amish haircut. This was back in 2018 yet, and I'd been out of the Amish now for 6 years, and I still had my Amish haircut. I didn't think there's anything wrong with it. But God was kept, as I struggled with these mops of hair in our church, God was talking to me and saying, you know, you still, what about you? You know, you still have a lot of hair too. I didn't have it styled though. Well, you still have a lot of hair. And so finally, it was so hard because I knew all my brothers and sisters in the Amish were just, Danny, why'd you do that? And that's exactly what happened. But so the pressure was there. There was so much pressure. And I did not cut my hair. And my wife, I finally let my son do it, my oldest son, and then I let my other boys do it, and I still didn't. And finally, I buckled. I thought, if I want to have any power at all with these mops of hair in church, I need to get rid of mine first. And so I did. And over the next few years, a lot of the other stuff kind of went away. God took care of the rest. If we take care of our own. But that's just a side note. But there's a lot of pressure for styling hair and for having, you know, make it look. But when you just get rid of it or just cover it, no more pressure. And that's how God ordained it. So there's no pressure there. We're a girl, we just cover our head, and there's no pressure there to style it. And if we're a boy, we just get rid of that hair, and there's no pressure there to style it. You know, it's just, that's the way I look at it. Get rid of some of that pressure. There's a lot of positive things came in. Here's one. Seeing other friends who were serious in their Christian life peer pressured me to get more serious as well. So if we talked about being examples yesterday a little bit. If, you know, be serious in your Christian life, and others will be pressured into getting serious too. I love that when I saw that. Another one was my peers, knowing that my peers are getting up and spending time with God, pressured me to do the same. It's hard to get up early in the morning and spend time with God. But as soon as you're doing it, it's a blessing. But if your peers are doing it, that helps. So be one of those peers who does it. Be an older brother or a younger brother or a sister who gets up early and spends time with God. And you'll have others that will be pressured into doing that too. Older married sisters has been a positive influence in my life. And this is I'm saying this to you, but we should have a lot of sisters in here that we can say this to. But you can go home and tell your moms One of the sisters had this. Older married sisters has been a positive influence in my life, being able to have biblical conversations with them. And then here's one. Music has had a positive influence to turn my heart towards God. And then another was singing with others has had a positive influence. So like we had the negative, it can be very positive too, these influences. Another one here was seeing others serving selflessly and looking for opportunities, even if it is in small ways. Just seeing others serve. We have young men in our church that just bless me. I'm there sitting, just barely getting done eating, and I'm visiting at the top of or at the full blast. I love to visit, and I'm there visiting. Here are these young men; they're done eating, and they're clearing off the table, serving. I don't know how maybe you all do that here too, but that blesses me when the young men do that here in our congregation. Something I never did is serving that way. And here's another one. Godly youth who are striving for perfection pushes me to strive for perfection. When you see someone who's striving for perfection, that's a push for you. And another one was the value and worth of friendships. Seeing the value and worth of friendships. Remember this. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33 says, be not deceived. We talk about being deceived, the deceitfulness of riches and sin. It says, be not deceived. Evil communications, that word means companionships. Evil companionships corrupt good manners. So when I was a young man, I told you how I started drinking, but I hung around some other young men who were doing just that. I told you about Sammy. And there was another one whose name was Jake. And I remember my grandma, on my dad's mom, she would come to my dad and say, Danny should not be hanging out with those Paul Eicher boys. They are bad for him. And my dad just said, water seeks its own level. And he was right. But my grandma was more right. My dad, those boys had a bad influence on me, and I was pressured into drinking. And it was just bad communications, and they corrupted evil manners. I didn't want to be that way, but I became that way because I was with them. And that's what happens. When we associate with people who are good, we become good. When we associate with people who are bad, we become bad. And it's just a law. But there's an antidote for peer pressure. Did we know that? There's an antidote for that. We talked a little bit about that with David. What was his antidote? Do you know what an antidote is? Antidote. Anyone know what an antidote is? Probably know what it is. You don't know how to say it, maybe, huh? That's what I was. I didn't know what I knew what it was, but how do I say it? So I looked it up this morning, quick in the dictionary, and it just said anything that tends to counteract an evil. So anything that tends to counteract an evil. There was two definitions. One was the actual giving of a dose, and this was the second definition. So there's an antidote for negative peer pressure in our life. And the main one we read about several different places, but I'm going to read you this in Mark 12, verse 30. You all know this. And this is Jesus talking, saying, and thou shalt love the Lord. And this comes all the way back from Deuteronomy already. This is a law. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment, and thy neighbor as thyself is like unto it. So once we love, our love for God overwhelms us. And we're not going to have that love if we have a lot of other trash in our lives. We need to get rid of those things in our life that hinder us from loving God. But David loved God. And this giant was defying the armies of the living God. How dare you? And if we have that passion in our life for God, then even though there's a lot of bad pressure, it's fine. I'm sold out for God. Let me give you another antidote in Matthew 18, verse 1 to 4. An antidote for peer pressure. Matthew 18, verse 1 through 4. And at the same time, came the disciples unto Jesus, saying, Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus called a little child unto him and set him in the midst of them, and said, Verily I say unto you, except ye be converted and become as little children, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Now, how can that be an antidote? Well, let me tell you. Thursday night, see, it says here that Jesus called a little child, not just a child, but a little child. Now, when I think of a little child, I think of someone between the ages of 1 and 2 years old. I don't know what you think of, but it's just a little child. And we were at my son's place Thursday evening. Their daughter's first birthday is today. She's a year old. It's our only grandchild that we have. And by the way, me and my wife are kind of proud of her. But she takes after us somewhat. Anyhow, that was just a side note. So we were there, and also my daughter-in-law's parents were there. Their family was there. And we gave her a few little gifts for her birthday. And so we had supper, and we had a time of volleyball after supper and visiting, and then we all came in the house, and we had some did we have dessert at that time? And then we gave little Kendra her gifts, and she was there, and they opened the gifts, or they gave her the bag, and she would look in and get it, and she was just so glad, and another book, and then they had a little doll and a little dolly, what do you call it? Stroller, a dolly stroller and stuff. And she played with that totally unashamedly, not once looking up to see, is she doing the right thing? Am I smiling okay for y'all? Am I showing that I'm thankful? You know, not once anything of that. She was totally herself, a little child, humble. Not caring if we thought something. And several times we all busted out laughing. She kind of looked at us like, you know. But it was something so cute and so funny that we busted out laughing. But if they'd all laughed at me, I'd have been offended. But they weren't laughing at anyone adult. We were just laughing at a little child. And that's okay, right? Is it not okay that when we laugh at one another, we get hurt, don't we? Why do we? Why do we get hurt? It's because we have something in here that's called pride. We think we are someone important. But Jesus tells us we all need to humble ourselves as this little child. That's what conversion really means. That's what it says. Verily I say unto you, except ye be converted and become as little children, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. And then he says, Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is the greatest. You know, and if once we're that small in our own eyes, we no longer worry at all about what's equal or what's greater or less, do we? Those things don't mean anything to us anymore. And that is an antidote for peer pressure. Humble ourselves. And 1 Peter 5 talks about humbling ourselves also, verse 5 and 6. Just a few more things here. The continental divide, where does that go through at? Does anyone know? Here in the United States, where does that go through at? Continental divide. I used to know where it went. But it goes somewhere here, is it the Mississippi, or I'm not sure where the Continental Divide is. I've heard that, but I thought of that the other day, and you know, if water falls on the east side of the Continental Divide, I mean, it can be only a couple feet on the east side, but if it falls on the east side, it ends up at the east coast somewhere. But if it falls on the west side, and it can only be a couple feet on the other side, it'll end up eventually in the west coast, out in the ocean, Pacific Ocean versus the Atlantic Ocean. There's a vast difference. And so it is as we think of who that we're going to follow. What are we going to look? Who are we going to look up to? Finding godly influences in our life. That's what I want to talk a little bit about that. Hebrews 13, verse 6 and 7. We're getting close to the end here. Hebrews 13, verse 6 and 7. So that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do unto me. Is that really true? That we may boldly say that? The Lord is my helper. I'm not going to fear. I'm not going to try to equal everything out. I will not fear what man will do unto me. Remember them which have the rule over you, have spoken unto you the word of God, whose faith follow, considering the end of their walk with Christ, their conversation. Find a godly influence to follow. Proverbs 13:20 says, he that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. Look at the vast difference. If we make ourselves, and if I'd have stayed with the group I was staying with, I'd have been destroyed. I don't know if I'd have ever found salvation. But there's a lot of things that happened in my life that took me from the West Coast to the East Coast, or whatever, however you want to say that. It took me on the other side. I'll just give you a couple of those here before we close. After our second child was born, we grew up where powwowing was a normal thing to do in our community. Anyone know what powwowing is? They call it Brüche in German. And there was a lot of that went on, and there was pressure to do that. And our second child had colic. We called it colic back then. It was a lot of upset stomach as a baby, as a 1 and 2 month old baby. And my grandpa just passed away. My grandma did that, whatever she did, and to take that bellyache away, to take the pain away. And so we were at my dad and mom's house for a meal, and she was there, and the baby was crying, and she asked, I was in the kitchen with my dad and mom, they were preparing the meal, and I was in there visiting, and my grandma asked my wife, what's wrong with her? She had a bellyache, and well, give her here, and I can powwow for her. And we had just found out, or she had found out, and had talked to me about it, that powwowing is not of God. It's powers of darkness. I'd never heard any of that. But her sisters that had gotten converted and left the Amish had told her that powwowing is not from God. Oh, I can't imagine, because I grew up, and here I was already 31, 32 years old, and maybe 33 by that time, and someone telling me that powwowing is not of God, it does all this good. How can it not be of God? But they were confident, and they told my wife, and I said, I don't know. And then so we were there for lunch, and my grandma said, give the baby here. And my wife didn't want to, because she knew about powwowing be wrong. But we were also taught to respect our elders, always, you know, be obedient to anyone that's older than us. And so my wife, after my grandma said something the second time, she handed the baby over, but she said a little prayer to herself, saying, praying to God, if this is from you, let it help. But if it's not from you, don't let it help. And so my grandma did her thing and handed the baby back. And not long, almost immediately, little Lydia just cried more than ever. I mean, she had a lot of pain now. It really came. And when grandma was aware of that, she said, that's never happened before. Give the baby here, and I'll do it again. And my wife said, no, and she quit, went out of the room with the baby. And then she told me about that. Now, I had a choice to make, or we had a choice to make. Are we going to say, that was just a chance happening? Or are we going to say, God was speaking to us today? I chose to believe in God, And I think that was a mile marker in my journey to God, is I chose to say, this is from you, and powwowing is wrong. And I talked to my dad right after that and told him what happened. I talked to my brothers about that, and all of them kind of had, so my dad's response was, well, I've never done it, I've never had it done on me, but to say that it's wrong, I wouldn't go that far. That's going a little far, Danny. I wouldn't go that far. No, grandma's done it all her life, and you know, she's still good. But I said, I won't have anything to do with it. Nothing. And my brothers kind of had the same response. One of them just didn't say anything. He didn't have no response. The other one said, yeah, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. And you know, today they're still where they were 28 years ago. They're still there. That things are not going well for them a lot. But just there's pressure for us. Are we going to believe God? You know, how are we going to react? I think with that we'll close. God bless you all. I don't know if I covered the peer pressure thing like was wanted, they was wanting here or not, but God bless you as you journey with God. It's been a pleasure here to be with you all.